You're listening to a podcast from Mosaic Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. For more audio and video content, visit us at mosaicchurch.tv. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the message.
Good morning. Hey, how are we feeling this morning? Good? Good. Hey, can we make some noise for Metro as well? What's up? How are you guys? And live stream people in the house, glad you joined us as well. Man, what a great weekend. Obviously, I want to first of all say so proud of you, those of you who volunteered this past weekend, and for those of you who give to Mosaic. I mean, I just want to say this. For those of you who give financially, it's because of your gifts and your sacrifice, your commitment. We get to actually have the resources, i.e. money, to actually do things. How many of you know it takes money to do stuff? Anybody? Yes, it takes money to do stuff. And so it takes money to be generous as well, especially when we want to build something, we want to give something away, we want to bless people. And so thank you for those of you who give to Mosaic. Thank you so much. The Metro, thank you for providing and giving to that campus. Those of you who give online, I mean, God bless you. You're not even in this state, but you give. And so thank you so much. I mean, it's amazing when we give together, we sacrifice together, we're able to do so much good. And so we want to be that church. And I want to say this too. Those of you who have been thinking about giving and you're like, I don't know, it's hard. Listen, jump in, be a partner, because for so many of us, and you know this, right? You're finding your new faith. Like you're reclaiming your adult faith. You're figuring out what you really believe, not what you were supposed to believe. And so this is just a great environment for those of you who've just give. And so we provide an opportunity to create a church. So thank you. Thank you for giving, being a part. And if you want to partner with us, do that. I mean, let's be the church that reclaims the message and movement of Jesus, right? Let's do that. Be a people who live by faith, who are known by love, and that what? We are what? A voice of hope. Let's do that. So thank you so much for that. Thank you so much. If you're a guest, though, if you're wondering what's going on, and maybe you walked into Metro, you're like, what's happening? Well, we do these. It's What If Everyone a weekend, outreach programs. But throughout the week and throughout the year, we're doing so many multiple things. And so we want to be really practical in our expression of our spirituality. And that's why we're in a series called Relational Intelligence, trying to be relational ninjas. And so if you're a guest here, this is like week 4, and we're going to be talking about conflict. It's pretty timely, isn't it? How many of you are really great at fighting? Woo! Okay, we got one who's a fighter. Should have put her in UFC. Did anybody see the fight? Yeah. No? Yes? Okay, one person. That's good. Yeah, it got a little crazy. I think it's very timely to talk about conflict in light of this weekend. I remember a story. It's funny because the conflict that I'm talking about hopefully has nothing to do with like pulling, not pulling punches, but actually striking people. It's more about family drama. Family drama. Anybody have family drama at all by any means? Marriage drama. Anybody have marriage drama? Right. Yeah, the guy was like, no, we don't. And if we do, it's my fault. Yeah, I mean, we all do. So one memorable story for me, I think, is like, so it's kind of sad, but it's funny. But so right after 9/11, those of you who do not know, I'm an immigrant and my family moved here from Pakistan. And so after 9/11, we had some immigration issues. My mom got deported. Okay, sad story, terrible. She's back. And she came back after 3 years, but that's not the point of the story. There's actually a humorous side of the story. The humorous side is, well, it's sort of humorous. Anyways, I want to tell a story, and you guys decide, all right? How about that? So she got deported, and then her cat died. So hold up. I know, it's not going good here. But her cat died. Her cat's name was Boo, okay? Boo died. And so my sisters, you know, they were mortified by the whole thing, you know, and my mom was actually gonna come back. She got a visa to come back, and so they're like, okay, mom's coming back, but her cat just died, so we gotta do something. And so my sisters did not want to talk to her or tell her about her fact that her cat died. So they said, okay, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna buy another cat, and we're gonna pretend it's Boo. And it's my two sisters. And I don't know if you have sisters, but anyway, so I'm like, okay, what, we're doing this? So we were talking about it, and then one day a cat just showed up. Now, so the Boo is an orange kind of cat, an orange big, like, you know, fat cat, okay? Fat orange cat, okay? I believe the Boo was a female, I think, yeah. So they brought this cat, and I'm like, and they go, this is Boo now, this is Boo. And I go, this is mom's cat now. And I go, this is mom's cat? Well, okay, it's the same color, but it's skinnier, and it's a male. And they're like, no, this is mom's cat. We're gonna tell her this is her cat. And she just lost weight. I said, you're serious about this? You're serious about this? So then I'm like, you know, then we're hanging out with the cat, and I'm like calling it Boo. And I said, Boo, or something. I said something. And then they stop, and they're like, no, you can't call the cat Boo. Its name is Pez. I was like, so don't call her Boo. You'll confuse the cat. So your giant plan, because you don't want to tell mom bad news, you're going to tell her that her cat, like, lost weight, had a sex change, and a new name? Like, are we doing, that's what we're doing? They were like, yes. I'm like, are you serious? And it really actually happened. They presented mom the cat. I'm like, look at this. It was a ridiculous moment, because mom knew, obviously, this is not her cat. But it's so funny, the amount of stories we will tell, the amount of run around we will allow ourselves to kind of, you know, participate in just to not have a hard conversation. Anybody avoid hard conversations? I know, it's so tough. You know, with me, I Ashley and I, we've been married almost 20 years. Next year will be 20 years. Yes, right? And so we've had conflict, you know, but she's realized that it's mostly her fault. So it's really good. It's really good. No, it's not. And so we've been talking about how we deal with conflict, and she, you know, she's told me before, like, I bottle things in. Like, I don't talk about it a whole lot, and then one day I just snap. I snap. I'm like that kind of a guy. I don't know if you're that kind of person, but I think I am. I remember once, like, we were in Italy or something, and there was a guy who's trying to get money from us or trying to talk to us or something like that. I don't know. He was following us around a little bit, and I was like, I don't want to buy anything. I don't want to do anything. And then at one point, I just snapped. Like, I just went like, I'm going to kill you. Like, not like I'm going to kill you, but I felt like he was endangering my family. And so I just turned around, and I was about to take his head off. And I'm like, and I had to stop myself. I'm like, what's going on? I realized I do this with almost everything. I'm all cool. And then one day, it's over. It's like, you know, and I think my kids know it too. Like, so, people talk about how do you discipline your kids? I'm like, I don't know, but they just know. They know when dad switches over, when you see his eyes and they're all red, you know, just listen to him. Don't tell him anything. He just listen, because someone is like, something's gonna happen. And it's so interesting, like, the way I've figured out the way I work. And in this conversation that we're having about conflict, I wonder if you're that kind of person. Do you bottle things in, or do you snap, or do you, like, kind of just hold stuff and you don't want to bring it up, or you want to just keep the peace? How do you deal with conflict? Because this is a great conversation to have, especially in relationships, because I think so many of us have, like, really terrible relationships. We just have, like, awful relationships. And you know what I love about the Bible is that the collection of books that God just kind of put together for us tells us the story of humanity, kind of tells us what we're good at and what we're not good at, tells us the direction that we need to move towards, and gives us the hope that we need. And it's amazing, because, like, so many people in the past have looked at the scriptures and gone, you know, I don't think they're relevant, or I don't know if I believe everything. But if you look at the scriptures, you'll find there's so much truth. There's such a bigger story that's being told. And there's so many things going on under the surface that God is saying so many things just through particular verses or stories that he's allowed to put in here. And I think one of the things that God has shown us, if you look at the scriptures, is that in the scriptures, there are no great examples of conflict management. There really isn't. There is no, like, and this family unit was amazing. Do this. No, it's not even, it's amazing to me the amount of self-criticism the scriptures have. Like, they critique themselves. It's like, and this went wrong, and that was bad, and this is horrible, don't ever do that again. Like, it's like all kinds of craziness, because I don't know if you read other spiritual texts, but most religions, kind of portray their own religion in a very amazing light. Like, all the good stories are told in those scriptures. But in the Bible, it seems like God just says, okay, and tell them this too. And tell them this too. Like, it starts off in Genesis. Like, Genesis starts off with, like, Garden of Eden. Oh, my gosh, it's awesome. And then it's bad. It's bad. They disobey. There's a story that they get kicked out, the loss of relationships. They feel shame, nakedness, all that. It gets really crazy. I mean, chapter one is awesome. Oh, the bright stars. Oh, that's awesome. And then it just keeps on getting worse and worse. By chapter four, what happens? There's actually the first murder that takes place. If you don't know the story, it's Adam and Eve. They have two sons. Anybody know for extra points? Cain and Abel. Yes, Cain and Abel. Did you guys, Metro, did you say that? Cain and Abel, yeah. These guys know their Bible. All right, so anybody know what happened with them? They kind of had a little tiff, didn't they? A little bit more of a tiff. So here's what happened. Let me read you the account here. This is Genesis 4. For those of you who never read the Bible, this is amazing stuff. In a bad way. Okay, so then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must not rule over it. Now, let me give you some context. Basically, the context is Cain and Abel bring offerings to God. God approves of one, does not approve of Cain's offering, and Cain gets ticked off. He is mad. He's the older brother. He's just furious. And God speaks to him directly and says, "Hey, there's something wrong. There's something that you're not bringing up. There's something that you need to really fix. There's an issue coming up. There's sin. There's something that's going to overtake you. You have to do something about this." And he does not listen. Verse 8. Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." All right. While they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and what? Killed him. And then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother, Abel?" Like, I just imagine this is. When did this even happen? Like, did it happen right afterwards? We don't know. But here's what he says. I don't know. Am I my brother's what? Keeper. We know that phrase in the Western world, don't we? Am I my brother's keeper? Like, am I supposed to be responsible for him? Am I supposed to be taking care of him? Am I my brother's keeper? Which is really interesting because it shows the condition of how our conflicts get resolved. That for some reason we just remove our responsibility for one another. There's a disconnect to, like, if I'm mad, if my emotions are true, then I'm not responsible for you and I don't even care about you. And this is to the extreme. And then God deals with him and tells him that his brother's blood is crying out. I mean, it's pretty horrific. And if you go to chapters 5 and chapter 6, it gets worse and worse and worse. People start doing some really horrible things to themselves. And so now we find ourselves here. And we know this, right? If you've been in any dating relationships, and if you've had a heartbreak, you've had a betrayal, you've had something really horrible happen to you, you know you're still living through that. If you had a marriage that's been that didn't work out, if you have any abuse of any kind in any relationship, if you had a horrible childhood, you know there are conflicts that take place. There's things that happen in relationships that basically can scar us for the rest of our lives. And it's so tough. It's so tough. And trying to find sense, make sense of each other is so hard at times because we're all kind of dysfunctional, aren't we? So tough. So what do we do? What does it even look like? I don't know what it is, but we have to admit that there are certain conversations that we have to have because for some of us, we have given up. We've given up on the most important relationships that we need to invest in and need to go after. We've given up meeting with particular people, given up speaking to them. You haven't talked to them in years. You've given up hanging out, connecting. You've even kicked them out of Facebook. You have left Facebook because of this. I mean, there's so many things that you've done, and it's such a part of us. And we have to do something to figure out how do we deal with ourselves and each other and our issues and our conflict. Do we bring it up? Do we not bring it up? Do we allow our emotions to just take over us and do things that we regret for the rest of our lives? We've all done this. None of us are actually good at this. And so when I speak about this, I'm not thinking, hey, I'm not coming from a place of like, I think I know what I'm talking about. I don't think I know what I'm talking about. But I know there's a way to navigate conflict because every family has drama. I mean, if you think about it this way, even Jesus and his family unit had drama. They had just drama. You had Jesus. I mean, just imagine, okay? Jesus had three other brothers. He had dad who passed away, while they were younger, I believe. And then you had mom. And then you had, just think about it. You had one guy in there, your brother, Jesus, older brother, who thinks he's God. I mean, that's just going to be hard, right? That's going to be rough. Like growing up with Jesus, you're like, seriously, you're God? Whatever. No, really, I am. No, really, I am. No, you're not. Yeah, you just think you're God, right? Older brother syndrome. What's going on here? And then just the conflict between all of them and when Jesus actually became an adult and how he treated them because he got so much other attention from people. Like, for example, let me just read you a couple of things here. Matthew chapter 12 says this. It kind of records this story. It says, as Jesus was speaking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside asking to speak to him. Okay, so he's talking to a crowd. Mom and brothers come to him. Someone told Jesus, your mother and your brothers are standing outside and they want to speak to you. Then Jesus asked, who is my mother? Who is my brothers? Then he pointed to his disciples and said, look, these are my mother and my brothers. Anyone who does the will of my Father in heaven is my mother and my sister and my brother, my sister, and my mother. Okay, this sounds really great as we're reading it. But if you're related to Jesus, waiting for him, you're like, seriously? You're doing that now? I mean, I could just imagine me saying that to my mom. Oh, really? They all changed your diaper. Oh, she's your mother. Really, buddy? I mean, I can just imagine, right? Their brother's going, okay, this is not a time for an amazing, like, quote or a like sermon. I just need to talk to you. We have to talk about something, okay? It's amazing. They had tension. You know they had tension. Of course they had tension. This is another great one. John chapter 2. Okay, let me just show you the tension here. This is an account of the wedding that Jesus and his mother gets invited to. So it says here, the next day there was a wedding celebration in the village of Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the celebration. Verse 3, the wine supply ran out during the festivities. We got a problem, right? So Jesus' mother told him, they have no what? No more wine. And what did Jesus say? Dear woman, I love that. I can just feel the emotion behind it, like, for the love. Woman, dear woman, right? What does he say? That is not our problem. Like, have you ever said that to your mom? Mom, that is not our problem. Mom, we're not doing this. Mom, no. Jesus replied, right? It's not our problem. And then he says, my time has not yet come. Like basically Jesus is saying, oh, hold up here. There's going to be a coming out. I'm going to step into the scene here, and this is not going to be my first miracle. No. We're not doing this. My time's not come. No. There's a bigger, like, have you ever tried to explain something to your parents? Like, mom, let me, and they don't even get it. Like, they're not even listening, right? Because here's what happened. Verse 5. He says, my time has not come. Verse 5. But his mother told his servants, okay, just do whatever he tells you. Like, this mom knew her son. Like, yeah, that's great. Okay, so just do this. Like, that's the attitude. Like, the attitude is, like, there's a lot of relationship going on. It's like mom is saying, listen, I raised you. I know what you did with chocolate milk. You know what I'm saying? I know you always got it full all the time. I know your tricks, okay? Like, I've you know what to do here. Like, her mom knew. Her mom had to know. You pulled this before, buddy. You can do this again. You do it at home. Fix it. Do it. And Jesus is like, really? Really, my first miracle? Everybody's going to be like, my first miracle is making alcohol. God is going to change the course of the universe, steps into human history. First miracle, more alcohol. Really? Really? I know, Metro people are like, yes! No. But Jesus did it. That blows my mind. He did it. He did it. Right? I mean, he's like, I really don't want to do this, and it's none of my problem, and there are bigger issues here, and there are bigger healings to take place. Fine. He did it. There's something about relationships that Jesus kind of knew how to disagree, but not dishonor. And we have yet tried to figure that out in our society. For some reason, somehow Jesus knew that I don't treat people the way, based on what they believe. Think about it. I don't treat people based on even sometimes the way what they end up doing. Jesus treated people a very different way. As if he saw something in us that was more. He just treats us with a lot more respect and a lot more kindness. It seems like this king, this God who wants to serve the relationships that he's a part of. What's going on there? Did Jesus know something that we just don't know? I think there's so much. So much. And I think his family unit understood some things. So just to get really practical, if we just take this unit of Jesus with James and his other brothers, and then his mom, what the writings we do have is we had the writings of James, one of his brothers. And here's what his brothers says about this issue, this idea of relationships and relational intelligence, and I don't know, maybe it was something to do with how they worked as a family unit. James says this, James 3, he says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. There's something so profound in James' writing, isn't it? He's like, let me just tell you how we live. Let me just tell you what Jesus has done or how the culture that he created. There's so much truth to this. So when it comes to conflict, when it comes to relationships, this is so important. And this idea of being a peacemaker, he throws in there. Because we've heard of the phrase peacemaker versus peacekeeper. And they're extremely, extremely different. Like, for example, peacemakers... Matthew says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called what? Children of God. Proverbs 10:10 says this, people who wink at wrong cause trouble, but a bold reproof promotes what? Peace. Now, if you look at those two passages or two verses, one talks about this idea of like, you're blessed if you pursue peace. The other one says, hey, fake peace or winking at something or just disregarding something is not really good. You actually have to aggressively and boldly fight for peace. And that's really the big difference between a peacemaker and a peacekeeper. And I tend to be sometimes a peacekeeper because I don't want a drama. I don't want to create a scene. I just don't want to do that. I mean, even our family, I just don't like creating a scene until I switch. And then there's a scene. But I just don't want like creating a scene. And I kind of tend to fall into that. Or do you? Like this idea of a peacemaker. A peacemaker, I wrote down three things. So this is like super practical if you want to take notes. So peacekeepers, okay? Peacekeepers just want to keep the peace. Seriously, do not want to be the cause of discomfort. I mean, they just think that everything, like if you talk about something that's negative or ugly or bad, it's harmful, it's not beneficial. And they limit themselves. They limit themselves and they just don't want to cause discomfort to anyone, to themselves, to the situation, or to people. So you just keep the peace. Number two, peacekeepers tend to keep their issues to them what? To themselves. Do you do that? And what they want to do is they don't want to cause any drama. Sometimes they don't even think it's worth it. It's kind of a passive idea, like, you know what? There's no good that comes out of everybody just telling everybody how they feel, and we just don't want to talk about it, so just keep the peace. Do you have a person like that in your family? I'm sure you do. You might be married to one. Just a peacekeeper. Peacekeeper. It doesn't really work, though. Number three, peacekeepers often avoid having to deal with people who are different from themselves. I think that's huge. I think sometimes you don't even realize because you don't want to cause any kind of conflict, or because you don't want to cause any discomfort, you just don't even want to address something that's actually wrong. I mean, that's why some of the things that have happened in our country, you know, even the Jim Crow laws, like and they were noticing now the systems that were created long time ago that now we are actually redoing, were created by people who just didn't want to say, hey, that's wrong. We shouldn't do that. They were what? They were just peace keepers. And it actually can be extremely harmful when you just say, because silence can actually cause suffering in a relationship, in a culture, in a community, in our society, in a it can do that when we don't move forward and actually say we're not called to be peacekeepers. We're actually called to be peace what? Peacemakers. And that's why James says, hey, let me tell you this wisdom that I'm talking about, this relationship I'm talking about, this the way you talk to people, it's moving towards being a peacemaker. And a peacemaker does a couple of things. Let me give you three. Number one, peacemakers believe that peace must be disrupted in order to allow for greater peace to enter. I think I love this. It needs to be disruptive. It needs to be like, it needs to create a discomfort. There needs to be a time of you say, hey, this is wrong. This is not right. I don't like this. I'm not cool with this. This is not good. Even though you think this will cause trouble or drama. No, it actually causes and makes the way for more peace in our lives. Sometimes we just don't do that. I mean, at times we've done this. I mean, even the church does this, guys. The church does this. Like there are some issues we just don't even talk about. And I'm not saying we talk about every issue on stage, but there in the community of a church, we just don't bring up, we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about this. What about this? No. We'll just keep it outside of the church, which is actually a really terrible idea. Because if you want to be a peacemaker, then you have to have brave conversations, which is number two. Peacemakers take initiative to create spaces for brave conversations. And I love Mosaic because of that, because we're having a lot of brave conversations. There's a lot of people that are in groups, they're in community groups, you're a volunteer, you hang out in your with your group, you go out to lunch. There's so much community that happens here, but it's real community. And what I mean by that, it's brave conversations. We do this thing called after party, and it's obviously it's not the 10-minute party. It's the after party, because we like to party, apparently. Jesus did. So we have this after party, which is a dinner, and it's for newcomers and all that. And we were, last week, and it was at Metro as well, right after the service. And then we got here as well, a dinner here. And I love how we've created an environment where people can just be very real about some of the issues that they're facing. And you know what's really great? I've had people in after party go, I'm not quite sure if I even believe this Jesus stuff. And I'm like, And I know there are people going, what? What are you doing here? And I'm like, this is why we exist. This is a place where you go, this Mosaic is a place, honestly, what I want is I want you to lose your faith here. Your old faith. Your childish faith. I want you to stay, be here and go, hold up. All that is not true? It's not true. Then what is? This needs to be a place of brave conversations. To actually find an adult faith that's not childish, that's childlike, but that's committed to this person of Jesus. And so, let's have brave conversations. Number three, peacemakers build environments for peace to be possible. So that means no task, no conversation, no person is too small to have a conversation with. I think there are some people, you're like, I refuse to talk to them. I get it. It triggers certain things. But, friends, there's so much that we have to do if we're going to actually live in peace. Be peacemakers. It's work. It's just work. And you can't be passive about it. Great relationships, great environments, great things happen because of what? Work. They're just work. And it starts with hard conversations. Hard conversations. So if we ask James, right? James, how do you navigate this? I mean, you wrote down to us, like, you wrote down, you know, this idea of, like, the wisdom from heaven is, first of all, peace. So when you're talking to people, he's saying, when you're talking to people, first of all, it has to be pure. Then it has to be peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. He says, what does that look like? And, I was thinking about that a little bit, and I had this moment of, like, hold on. You know, if there are certain things in the Bible you're like, I don't know if I believe in all of this, James is one of those guys you really want to pay attention to. You know why? Because he's the brother of Jesus, right? Like, what do you have to do to convince your own brother you're the Son of God? That's a tough sell. When you grew up with him, but he's the guy who gave his life for him, right? I mean, he gave everything. I mean, he was convinced that his older brother was the Messiah, the Son of God. And you know what's funny about this? Is like, the Genesis starts off with Cain and Abel, right? Cain and Abel. So there's Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, two brothers. And the story starts with humanity, where it basically Cain, the older brother, kills the what? The younger brother. And then you take that, and then you kind of throw in this whole Christmas story in Matthew where Jesus steps into human history and you find, again, a family unit where you have mom and dad, you have Joseph and Mary, and then you have an older brother, Jesus, and then you have a younger brother, James. And I just stopped right there and I thought, oh my goodness, look at how powerful those stories are. In one story, the older brother kills the younger brother. In the gospel story, the older brother dies for his younger brother. He dies for not just James, but everybody. I mean, I think that's what Jesus was saying when he's talking about, hey, who's my mother, who's my sisters, who's my brothers? He's like, I'm going to die for everybody. It's this idea of, like, in relationships, you have to come from a place of, like, I'm willing to do everything. I'm willing to not take whatever I need and fulfill my needs. I'm willing to actually give. And that's this idea of being pure. James saw it. He's like, my older brother will die for me. Not kill me. Well, there are days, but he'll die for me. And that's why James died for him too. There's this idea there. There's a powerful example of what a great relationship could look like. So what does it even look like practically, right? So if I haven't given you enough notes, I'm going to give you some more, because when it comes to conflict, there's stuff to write down, guys. So if you've taken notes, great. Here's a couple of things, okay? I'm going to give you six things, three things that I believe that James is saying we need to commit to. We need to commit to. Okay, these are three things you need to commit to. Number one is this idea of mutual submission. Mutual submission. Number two is expressed expectations. Number three is clear communication. Super practical, so true. Number one, mutual submission. We do not do this well. We do not teach this well in Christianity. When I first got introduced to Christianity, I saw there was a hierarchy. There was always a hierarchy. And when you look at relationships with husband and wives, there's always a hierarchy. There's always a hierarchy. And even in the Trinity, there's always a hierarchy. It seems like the scriptures were taken and then interpreted in a particular context where it's like, okay, who's on top and who's not on top and who submits to who and who submits to who and who takes orders from who. And it's a very broken system, by the way. But when you look at the relationships of Jesus, there is this idea of mutual submission. So when you read the passages in the Bible about, you know, husbands love your wives and, you know, wives respect your husbands, it's talking about this idea of mutual submission. Not one submits to the other. Both submit to one another. A relationship does not work if one person is always number one. If one person's always the final, if one person always wins, if one person is always competing to be number on top, it does not work. In a business, it doesn't work. In a relationship, it doesn't work. In a friendship, it doesn't work. It does not work. James is saying it's got to be pure. It's got to be submissive. He's talking about mutual submission. No competition. We are both committed to humility. I'll tell you, a lot of relationships, especially marriage relationships, number one problem is pride. It's just pride. I want my way. Well, it's over then. Because if one person always wants to be the winner in this, it's not going to work. If we don't get this right, we won't get anything right. If I'm not submitted to my wife, how can she submit to me? Because I don't have her best interest in mind. I have my interest in mind. It can't work like that. No relationships work like that. Number two, expressed expectations. What does that mean? No mind reading. No mind reading. You know? No surprises. And there's always room for growth and change. It is amazing to me that the closest people around us give us no room to grow. Have you noticed that? Why? Why? It's amazing to me. Third, clear communication. What does that mean? Not clear talking. Clear communication, which means the person has heard me, and I feel like I've been heard, and they've listened, and they've understood. Like they're in my shoes. They know what I'm talking about. They know how I feel. Like Ash and I do this. This is a secret we do, okay? Whenever there's a hard conversation, okay, we do this. We do it. Go. Okay, so let me tell you what I feel. It doesn't have to be true. Okay? I'm just telling you how I feel. And then I can say whatever. Because I'm not saying it's truth. But I feel like, and it just, we say it. And then we go, feelings are real. But they're not necessarily true. Does that make sense? Like I've said I feel a lot of things when I'm hungry. I have said a lot of things. If I'm cranky, if I haven't, oh my gosh. When I was not sleeping when we first had our kids for months or years, I don't know if I was a follower of Jesus. I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, I know I was a pastor, but I don't know if I was a follower of Jesus. I just, so angry. So like, would you go to sleep already? You know? It's just, so we can be clear. It's feelings are feelings. Not necessarily true all the time. And then there's honesty. There's like legit honesty. Honesty. You can, by the way, if you have mutual submission, you can have clear communication, because you can actually, there's room for honesty. And some relationships do not have room for honesty. Okay, last three things. Confront with, okay? So you got commit to, confront with. Confront with three things. Number one, a bigger perspective. Like, you got to confront with a bigger perspective. A bigger perspective than just this fight, than just this issue. A bigger perspective. You see, when people don't do what they say they would do, if people don't show up, if they let you down, there's always a fill in the blank for you to put whatever you can in there. So in a co-working situation or in any situation, when people don't act or don't show up, there's a blank, and you and I get to fill that blank. Oh, they're always late. Or, roll the eyes. You always have a blank to put there. You fill in the blank. And I've told our staff some this, when someone doesn't do something that you think they were supposed to do or they said they were going to do, don't fill in that blank with distrust. Fill in the blank with faith. Fill in the blank with something positive. You know what? Maybe there's a good reason why. There's a good reason why. Because you and I get to fill in the blank. For some of us, we've filled in the blank so many times, it's all negative things, and you don't have a bigger perspective in mind. The truth is that you can actually overlook some offenses. The scripture says to do that in 1 Peter. And we have to have a bigger perspective. You have to have grace and truth. And for some of us, you need to confront an issue with a bigger perspective, and that means you have to be in grace. And you got to confront with truth. In grace means you need grace too. And then truth. So bigger perspective. Number two, appropriate emotions. You got to confront with appropriate emotions. What does that mean? It means kindness. It means kindness. It doesn't mean extreme talking. You always do this. You never do that. Well, then that's over. If you have always and never in a sentence, what do we do then? If I ever and never, I mean, that's not appropriate emotion, okay? That's not appropriate emotion. You can't deny things, you can't attack, and you can't judge. When you do those with those kind of emotions, you have judgy emotions, and you're attacking, it does not really help. And sometimes you need a third party to step in and help. Third, lastly, intentional timing. And that means, like, you gotta have wisdom and tact for it. Sometimes the reason why your conversations are really terrible and your conflict is really terrible is because you picked the worst timing. Or the worst timing. I mean, I have learned quick, like, the worst time to drop an issue is like at 9:30 at night with Ashley, because she's about to go to bed, and like, hey, by the way, that was terrible. Okay, good night. You know, like, what? It's the worst thing. I can just say it. She's thinking about it, it's the worst. And in learning, timing is so crucial. I remember in arguments we would have conversations, and I would say, I'll rattle off stuff, and I'm like, and she's like. And in my head, I'm like, say something! And she's like, I have to process. Process? If you really cared, you would process faster. Like, you know, like, I'm like, it was so dumb, so dumb, so dumb. Just understanding these things, being intentional, all right? So I hope this has been helpful. And the reason why I want to kind of make sure you get this is because of this. There's so many of us, and I'll end with this. There's so many of us that are living with a false sense of security, closeness, and peace in our relationships. And you know it. And I pray, honestly, I think you need to go back and re-watch or listen to this talk and really process this with your groups, with yourself, and go, God, what are we going to do? What am I going to do when it comes to conflict? Because it honestly is connected to your fulfillment in life for so many of us. And when it comes to God, It's the same. You don't want to bring it up. You don't want to have conflict. There's certain things you are not even saying to God that you need to say to God. You do. Be honest with him, and he has room for you. So I don't know where you are, but I want to pray that you would move one step closer. Let me pray for us. Lord God, thank you so much for today. Thank you, God, that you are a God that loves us. You're a God who knows us. You're a God who sees us. And Father, I just pray that in the midst of the relationships that we're in right now, I pray, God, that you would cause so much, hope to well up inside of us. That God, that wherever we're seated, maybe it's at Metro, maybe we're sitting there going, there's no hope for my relationship. There's no hope. God, I pray for hope. I pray for hope. God, I know there are people who are find themselves so sad, so dissatisfied in life because of relationship. And Lord, I pray, God, that there's got to be a way. And I know, Father, that your power is made perfect in our weakness. So God, I pray, would you cover our relationships? Would you restore? Would you renew? Would you recover some? Would you bring healing and forgiveness? Would you bring boldness and kindness? Would you bring purity? Would you bring submission, mercy into our relationships? God, I pray you do this, that we could be people, Lord God, who are full of life, full of you. And we are our brother's keeper. God, we love you. We thank you. In Jesus' name.
Thanks for listening to this message from Mosaic Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. For more audio and video content, visit us at mosaicchurch.tv.